Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone, and yes, as they say, let's get started. Tonight we have a special guest with us. Gemma Jade is in the house, and in just a moment I am going to play for you the introduction that introduces her on the Paraflix TV talk show Disembodied Voices. And if you want to learn a little bit more about that TV show, just look in the show notes below. Well, this is going to be a two-part show. So as they say, let's roll part one.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Let me introduce you to a very special person, Gemma Jade. Gemma Jade is a lifelong physical medium who has had her gifts since the day she was born. She believes some of these gifts have come from her extended family. She has had in her lifetime experiences with the supernatural, paranormal, otherworldly, and even extraterrestrial. She has written a book on fairies and their culture and how they could possibly be connected to missing people in the woods as well as all over the world. She is an oracle, someone who brings messages from spirit to others in need through the use of cards and/or meditation. She recently teamed up with fellow paranormalist, author, and YouTube personality Steve Stockton, who together they wrote a best-selling book called Encounters with Evil, 101 True and Terrifying Stories. She has seen and personally encountered shadow people, ghosts, spirits, and the djinn, and you can find her on her YouTube channel simply titled Gemma Jade. We had a lot to discuss this evening. This is nearly a two-hour show, and I think you're going to find our discussions to be engaging, well thought out, and very beneficial. So without further ado, let's please welcome my guest, Gemma Jade. Well, hello, Gemma, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. Very interesting talk we're going to have tonight. Your introduction, it might be a little bit short, but it's certainly mighty, and I think we're going to learn a lot from you this evening. So what I usually do, and everybody knows this because those that have been following us on this show would basically say to me, I already know the drill. She's going to ask her about her humble beginnings. Yes, I'm going to ask her about her humble beginnings because I do believe that it's really important that we establish a foundation on everybody before we get into our chatter. And so, Gemma, why don't you go ahead and go back as far as you can possibly think about here and tell us where some of this paranormal stuff might have started for you.
Well, my first memory of anything paranormal, I would have to say, would be the full-bodied apparitions. I believe I started seeing it around 4 years old, but according to my parents, it was much earlier than that, but I just don't remember. So I would see little kids in my room with me, or I'd be sitting at the dinner table and there would be like extra people there. With my Irish Catholic father, bless his heart, I learned very quickly not to mention it. But my mother is Native American, so she kind of knew what was going on with me. I've been a physical medium, I guess, since birth.
Interesting. Interesting. So this all, well, then let's ask about the parents, shall we? So either of your parents or grandparents, or were you ever told that they had some of these gifts, or was this just something you just didn't talk about?
I believe it was inherited, not because I spoke about it with my parents. Like I said, my dad was, I think he's still to this day, is just a little scared of it. I really don't talk about it with him. My mother, I realize now, and I've learned, is a Native American Cherokee tribe. She is a healer. She hasn't come into it yet, but the way I kind of got through all this as a child is, believe it or not, my paternal grandmother, so my father's mother, kind of knew, again, what was going on with me. And she lived right upstairs for a while. And I was like the only grandkid out of like 30, you know, the Irish, that she would spend time with. And I think this was because she would talk to me about the fae folk, and she would talk to me about, you know, how to protect and guard myself from anything that I may not have wanted to be seeing. You know, I had shadow people trying to convince me to chew wires and jump in front of trucks. And
oh my God,
not all of it is good. They tormented me as a child, the shadow people.
Interesting. Let's go back. So let's go back. Now you've got me, my thoughts are rolling here a little bit. So you were what did you call yourself when you were a physical medium?
Physical medium.
Can you explain to everybody what that is? Let's start with that.
Sure. So a physical medium is someone who interacts with the dead.
Oh.
And in my case, and in most cases with physical mediums, any otherworldly, supernatural, or even extraterrestrial entity that may be around anywhere. Okay. So if I don't protect myself, I can walk through the grocery store and see dead. I live basically in the woods in the middle of nowhere, and there are dead. So learning how to block that so they can't just get through, you know, but if a physical medium is someone who interacts with the dead, I can cross certain dead over. I do walkthroughs of people's houses to see what is haunting them, bothering them, attacking them.
Interesting. Did you say you can actually do that and go through people's houses?
I just started doing it professionally a few months ago, actually, because I'm just coming into all this. I hid it for a very long time for fear that it was some kind of curse, being also a very religious Christian. I had to really come into that fine line between what I was given as gifts and my religion, which I still toe that line very, very steadily right now. But I recently embraced it, and I do all of it for a living. So yeah, I walk through kind of like the show Dead Files, only, I mean, I'm no Amy Allen, but I can do that. Yeah.
Wow. That is, well, there's not a lot of people that can do that. So that's really fascinating. Because you know, you'll probably be in high demand if that's the case. So I want to go back, and then I want to ask a question about actually walking through physical walls and stuff like that, and how that affects your body or what you feel when you do that. But I want to go back again. Let's go back to when you're very young here. So was there ever a point in your young age where you recognize that you might not be the same as other kids your age? When was that? Do you remember?
I always knew I was a little different, because I knew just from my dad's reactions that he couldn't see what I was seeing. And my mom didn't want to upset my dad either. But when I started school was when I noticed. because I was seeing extra little kids that were not in my class. So I would be in the corner playing with two or three of these little kids or young kids. And I'd wonder why some were older, but I was like six, you know, five or six. Yeah. And the teacher would be like, why are you playing in the corner all by yourself? Come and play. And I'm like, I'm not. I'm playing with, you know, Billy and Sarah. And she's like, okay, this is a problem. So, you know, back, this is like the late 80s, early 90s. Oh. So it wasn't very accepted. And I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have a lot of support. And I think that's when I finally realized, like, I better be quiet about this because this is, you know, going to get me in trouble somehow.
Yeah, it just seems like, especially back then, we didn't talk about any of that stuff. I mean, I was a lot, I'm a bit older than you are, but we still didn't talk about it back in the 80s and stuff like that. Yeah. Actually, even before then, we never talked about it. People would always joke about it or imaginary friends, but no one really ever spoke of it. So do you think that, did you say that you think that maybe some of your gifts came from your paternal side, grandmother's side? Is that where you're thinking it might have come from?
I don't know if it came from that side. Now, usually abilities as far as like having fae blood, the abilities that come with that and getting to know the fae comes from the maternal side. And I know my mother, like I said, she's just starting to come into at her age being a Native American, like a healer in their community. But for me, I do think it came from both sides, to be honest with you. I think my father's mother either was gifted like I am and just didn't say anything, just supported me. I don't know about my mom's mom or anyone on her side. So I know for sure my paternal grandmother and my mother have gifts. A little bit different than mine, but definitely there.
Well, and you know, those gifts probably, if they were to look back themselves, they would probably say, I got this gift from so-and-so. And they would say, yeah, I got this gift from so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And so do you think, from what it sounds to me, like you were born with this? It just didn't develop over time. It just all of a sudden happened. All right, so now you're in school and you're having these playmates that you can't see and people are starting to kind of, I don't want to say react to you a little bit, and then you're kind of like quiet or at least being a little bit more quiet about it. Tell me a little bit about when your first interaction at home. Did you ever have something at your house that, I mean, you had mentioned something had, you know, wanted you to chew on wires and all that sort of thing. What was your, can you recall your very first time that you ran into literally something at home, whether it was a positive or a negative force?
My first full-bodied apparition that I saw was of an older gentleman that I didn't recognize. It's pretty much my first memory. It was my fourth birthday, as a matter of fact. I remember getting my first bicycle with the training wheels. I'll never forget it. And I remember speaking to this older gentleman, and he just looked, he looked to me like Ricky Ricardo, to be honest with you. Yeah. I just kept associating. So I thought Ricky Ricardo was in the house, which was cool. Like, they got Ricky Ricardo for my birthday. Cause I Love Lucy played back then, you know, it was 87, 88, 87.
Yeah.
But I came to realize once again that I was being weird talking to the corner. I saw him in a couple of the pictures, even as I got older. And I came to realize that that is my maternal grandfather, who I only met. He passed when I was 3 months old. But it said that he, you know, all my grandparents, I was like the favorite. I don't know why out of the family. I think they somehow sensed that something was different about me. Mm-hmm. So he had passed away of a heart attack when I was about 3 months old, but my mother was his favorite. Therefore, I look just like my mom. So I did realize it was my grandpa, James.
Mm-hmm. And let me add to that. So when you compared that picture to that image that showed up to you, was it of the age of which he passed away, or did he show himself to be a little bit younger than the age that he passed away? Do you recall? Did you ever do a comparison?
I do. That's the crazy thing about spirit. I've noticed in my experience, they almost always show up at like 27 years old, unless I knew them in life or they're known in life. I mean, I've had some cases that have been on TV, but for my grandpa, it was kind of like he knew down the line I was going to come across this. There's only about two or three pictures of him that exist now. Mm-hmm. And at the time when I noticed the picture, which was, I was like 10 years old, mm-hmm. he showed himself to me exactly as he looked in that picture. Like he knew that 6 years or 7 years from then, I was going to see that picture and identify him with that picture. Because mm-hmm. he was even wearing the same flannel shirt and blue jeans.
Oh, interesting. That's even interesting. Yeah, about the clothing that they wore. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, that, and that is, that has been my experience. I've photographed images of my relatives, and I don't believe that they're tricksters to this day. I believe it was them, because I had always wanted to see a ghost on their property, and it became them like 20 some years later. And they were younger in their look. And a lot of times when people pass away, especially if their spirit does engage and is around, a lot of times they show themselves at a younger age, or a point where they felt happiest or healthiest or whatever like that. So if a lot of times it gets more confusing when they're older, not that it doesn't happen. I'm sure. I mean, you hear these reports all the time, mm-hmm. this older woman, you know, what is she? What, you know, some age, but very fascinating. So let's go a little bit further on this now, and let's go into high school. And so here you are in high school and, of course, doing your thing and all that stuff. Now, you're at an age, of course, where you're now probably not going to be going and talking to someone in the corner. But what kind of experiences did you have while you were in high school?
High school, I was a loner. Ever since I was a little girl, books were my friends because I was so, I want to say weird. I was considered weird, right? So high school would be mid to late 90s for me. The Craft was a really big movie. I started noticing like, hey, I can do that stuff. You know, I know how to do, I just knew how to do it. So when I saw The Craft and my friends and I got together and got our tarot cards and our Ouija board, which I didn't realize was dangerous. I was just able to do these things very quickly. But in high school, you know, I was an angsty high schooler. I was really good, honor roll student, you know, total suck up, but I was not popular with my peers. And I was starting to notice that I would think, you know, oh, I don't like Jamie. And then like 3 days later, Jamie would break her arm. Or, you know, I really can't stand Scott. I can't believe he said that to me. And then Scott would, you know, trip and bust his face open. I started thinking maybe I was responsible for these things. I still to this day don't know, but it really scared me a lot. And I kind of shut everything down mostly my whole life up until about a year ago. I just didn't want to deal with it. I put up my barriers and my blocks and my guards, and I never spoke to my guides or any other spirit. When I see them, I'd ignore them.
That's interesting that you say that, because I was probably, I'm trying to think, about 28 maybe, when, and even earlier than that, when I went to see a psychic, and she had warned me. She said, you need to be very careful about your mind. It's very powerful. Of course, I didn't know what she was talking about. I thought, who is this? You know, what is she talking about? But there were two situations that occurred where it wasn't a good thing.
It's and, scary.
Yeah. And, you know, I to this day, I really don't know what it is in our minds or our brains that actually can cause some of this stuff. But I did, the minute she said that, and then when the last thing had happened that I thought, and then she said, oh my God, I thought this is absolutely true. She's not kidding me. I've calmed myself down, or I've shut it down, where if I get really angry or I get really bothered by something, I try very, very hard to block any negative thought that can go beyond into like a devastation level or something of a tragedy or something like that. And I have practiced that probably now for a good maybe 25 years or something. Have you found yourself kind of doing the same thing?
I definitely, yeah. It wasn't very good for me mentally, because blocking out the dead is this constant pressure on your back, like a constant sinus headache, constant migraines. As far as what you were saying though, with energy, mm-hmm. about 6 months ago, I would say I got really angry in my house. And I call that point you're talking about mm-hmm. the point of non-sensitive. So I try not to get past what a non-sensitive person or a person without abilities would get.
Yeah.
Man, I yelled at my husband. I slammed my hand down and bam, the microwave just went.
Yeah.
Wasn't on nothing. It just blew. The plate inside of it, it was a really old, like this thick, yeah. Popped into like 20 pieces. The light blew. And I said, okay, mm-hmm. Got to sage the house, got to sage Gemma and kind of get back to focus, because something that, you know, it can be accidentally dangerous. And that's what I was afraid of as a teenager. And plus I was tired of always being surrounded by the dead. They drain you and they want help. I didn't know how to give them, you know, to this day, I do it for a living, and I wish I had started doing it soon because my life path did not go well. And I feel like a lot of it had to do with, I wasn't following my purpose.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I blew up a light bulb. And then all the hot glass started to, actually there was a lot of that fell on me, and I was trying to get it off because it was, you know, sitting there very, very hot. But, you know, at first I thought I blamed it on something paranormal. And then I thought to myself, no, I know how I can be like a pressure cooker. And then all of a sudden the lid just blows off. And so that's fascinating that you brought up the microwave and the glass in there and things just shattering, because sometimes people just don't know where this comes from, and it might be coming from them. That's very interesting. I do want to talk.
I was going to say, I noticed in my walkthroughs, when I go through people's homes to see attachments or demons or entities, some of the time I'll have to tell the person, like, it's not poltergeist activity, it's you. And I had one guy who was being tortured by his own inner demon. So he had a verbally abusive voice, just constantly pecking at him, calling him a loser, calling him this. It was his own internal thought processes that were manifesting because he was unable to express himself and handle what was going on. So
did he also internalize a lot of that? Like, you just kind of hit it. He wasn't able to get out his, I don't know if it's his anxiety or his anger or his
emotion. Any emotion. He was just so, like you said, a pressure cooker, and he was boiling, but it didn't explode into any kind of anger or rage. It became its own entity. So when we talk about inner demons, that's the only time I saw that happen, but I did see it happen. This man had to go through so much to get rid of that totem, an essential totem of his own inner demon. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful to watch the progression once he got through it, but man, was he tormented. I felt so bad for him because there's nothing I can do then. I can't cross the inner demon over. I can't exercise it. I can't do anything. I just had to tell him, you need to get psychiatric help and learn how to express yourself. And he did. And the transformation was amazing. And he helps people now in the same way, because he's sensitive. When you don't deal with your abilities,
right,
you really, it's just not good. It's not good for you. It wasn't good for me. You have to at least acknowledge them. You know, you can't just be like, oh, this isn't happening. Trust me. You can't don't ever do that. Anyone listening, if you have abilities, acknowledge them, do a little bit of research. Don't ever just pretend like you don't have them, because you will regret it.
Yeah. Well, I haunted 3 homes, but the thing is, it's like, in a couple of these homes, including the one I'm in right now, you know, I've had what is typically called poltergeist activity. And I was telling people on my shows, it took me 2 weeks to get rid of this poltergeist. Well, of course, I had a gal say to me on one of my most recent shows, are you sure it wasn't you being the poltergeist in your home? Well, I'm not sure, because the thing is, I did hear that, you know, that it's possible that the previous owner, when we moved to this house we're in right now, had 2 kids that were always mischievous, and they're playing with the Ouija board, and I was locked out of the house. And I don't know how the heck I could lock myself out of the house. I guess it could happen if my mind's on go, but there's all kinds of things that were happening in here. But also too, the fact that you know, there are days when I'm very, very calm, and you know, the front door I don't know, about a year ago, opened up and closed at 1:00 a.m. and startled my husband. He was in bed and he thought we had an intruder, and I was just working here I'm not even quite sure that was me. It might have been something else, but anyway, it's like a carnival sometimes in here, but relatively calm right now. But so how's your house? Let me ask you about your house then. What kind of activity do you have going on in there?
Well, my homes, anywhere that I live, like I said, anywhere that I go, there's always something there. I've really learned how to deal with it. So my home right now is pretty calm. Yeah. I recently had two deaths, my best friend in the whole world of 26 years, who happens to be the father of my 17-year-old and my stepfather. They passed within 3 weeks of each other. My son, my 4-year-old son. Now let me start here. My 17-year-old son is a physical medium like I've never seen before in my life. He has been seeing spirits, interacting with them his entire life, and he's learned how to block it completely, but I could see that it really does affect him in a lot of ways. He sleeps during the day, not at night, things like that. Yeah. So I was wondering if my 4-year-old also had it. And once my stepfather passed, whose name was Gary, and they would call each other buddy. That's my little buddy. That's my big buddy. All of the sudden, and my friend's name was Jeff. So all of the sudden, my son wants to play in his room, which he's never done. And he's like, come on, buddy, let's go play. Let's go play in the room. And I'm like, honey, I can't play right now. He's like, I'm talking to Pop, meaning Pop.
Yeah.
I brought his ashes here, a little bit of them, and I put them on my altar with crystals. But the strangest thing, like, he knew Pop, obviously. My best friend, Jeff, lived in Delaware. RJ had never met him. I hadn't even seen him in 15 years. We just communicated, you know, pretty much daily. I mean, we're best friends. All of a sudden, my son is talking on the phone. I said, oh, honey, who are you talking to? He's playing with his quote unquote imaginary friends. And it was Jeff. Hmm. So I know my son, my 4-year-old is sensitive. So what I do in my house to protect him and myself and my totally non-believing husband, he doesn't want to accept any of it. Like my dad, he's a boomer, you know, he's like a little older. So from a different school, but I put out spell jars that I've buried on my property, dragon's blood, white sage. I do rituals at least once a month on crossing spray, war water, all the stuff that I make and sell as a business. I do that for my own home. I have to do it regularly because I noticed when I stopped doing it, my son was being, you know, terrorized by shadow people like I was and enticed to bite wires and do crazy things. And then I had to teach him how to have a focus thing, which ended up being his pacifier. And at 4, he still has it. I got to get him on like a teddy bear where I had to teach him, just like our nightly prayers. I had to teach my 4-year-old that when he goes into bed at night, he has to say, I'm too young to help you go somewhere else. This is my personal space. And my son, he thinks it's part of the nightly, now I lay me down to sleep prayer, because they were scaring him. So there's activity because we're lights in the darkness for these lost souls, you know, and I'm going to teach him compassion for them. And I'm going to teach him I just taught him how to sage. And this morning I caught him putting intent into a crystal. I thought he was praying. And I said, oh, honey, that's so nice. You're praying. He goes, I'm activating my crystal, mommy, my tiger eye. And he had it in his hand. I took a video of it. It was so cute. Mm-hmm. So I am teaching him from a very early age because I don't want him to grow up with PTSD and I don't want him to grow up hating himself like I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, and it's scary too, because, you know, a lot of kids that age, because you're so, because this is the life you've lived, at least you recognize it and you can try to help him along with it. But when it's going to get to a point though, if he interacts with other children, I don't know. You're going to have to also teach him too how to tread carefully on that, because these kids aren't going to understand one living thing that he's going through. And then of course, he's going to be marked as the interesting kid or whatever, you know, and stuff.
I taught him that it's our special secret.
Yeah.
Our special secret friends are he calls them the light people. So, because they always have some kind of light lit aura around them. But I did have some attacks. I believe I met the devil himself when I was pregnant with my son in my house. I've had a troll infestation in my house. So, I mean, it's nonstop, but I know how to deal with most of it. Shadow people, I just don't know. Like, I've had extraterrestrial experiences. I believe I was abducted. I mean, everything you can think of, you know, but shadow people, they scare me because they're always around and I don't know. I don't know.
So let's talk. I want to talk about each of those. If I don't forget each of those, let's start with the shadow people. Okay, so I saw my first shadow person in this house probably about 2 months ago. Very small, but this was a very quick wisp, walking up the steps, coming up to the, you know, the master level, and just right in front of me, running across from the what would be the bathroom into my husband's office, was something about probably 2 feet high, very darker than black. So it was obvious, it caught my eye, but very quick and very fast. And of course, you know, I haven't seen anything of that nature in here since. I think if I ever saw a shadow figure to the point where it was like a humanoid body or something, I think I would absolutely freak out. So let me turn this back to you. What kind of shadows are you seeing, and at what time and where are you seeing them?
Okay, so I'll start with, right now I'm writing a book on shadow people because of my interest in them. Mainly, I've been seeing the same three shadow people since I was about 7 or 8 years old. And I did an article on it for the Paranormal Press magazine, how they've been kind of coming to me. I don't know if those are actual shadow people. I'm starting to think they're extraterrestrial because of the telepathic communication. When I go through people's houses, though, I'll start there.
Yeah.
And I see smaller shadow people like that.
Yeah.
I always get someone, or I look up myself, details of the land. Okay. What were there any Native American tribes? Because that to me is usually trickster. Now I'll say to it, tell me what you are. And they listen because I'm a human and I can tell them what to do. But a lot of them lie. And so in my house, I'd have to say I've seen the family, I call them, of three that are always with me that I recognize. And my son was seeing the quote unquote dark man, or you call him the black man, the dark man. And I was not seeing this entity, and you can't be psychic about yourself. And I don't know why it was able to hide from me, but I later found out from a psychic friend that it was someone who was extremely abusive to me in my life, who was now torturing my son in his death. But they're all over all the time. I do my Wednesday night stream for 4.5 hours, and I'm seeing them, you know, whip by when I get up for a break, or my co-host had some coming out of his curtains, all types, all kinds. The only one I've never had the pleasure of meeting, what is Mr. Hatman, who interests me, but I mean, any other, the dark shadows, the dark blobs, the small tricksters, the ones with the glowing red eyes, the ones that were like the dusters. I mean, I've seen them all. And honestly, I think to myself, with their energy, they all feel like something different, which is why, you know, if I see a demon, I could be like, okay, they have a demon, or, you know, I know how to keep those things for my house. None of my protection spells, charms, prayers stop these shadow entities.
No. My next door neighbor, her 10-year-old kept talking about how there was this black, I guess, shadow figure coming through her wall all the time, but it had red eyes. So what are your thoughts about a shadow figure, and what it did to her, which terrified the poor child? She'd be laying in bed, it would come through the wall, which, like the outer wall, like it came from outside in through the outer wall, and then it would come right up to her, and it would kind of look at her, probably about, oh, maybe a 2 feet away or something like that, but it had these red eyes and just would absolutely scare the bejesus out of her. And I think that she's seen this thing a couple times. Well, anyway, they got a cross and put this on. What are your thoughts about shadow figures with red eyes?
Well, usually it's the same thought as with other ones. I talk a lot on my channel and in the new book about how these entities, whatever they are, they're feeding off of our fear energy.
Correct.
So yeah, a little kid is really easy to pick on and scare. I believe some are time travelers who have to appear in shadows so they don't mess anything up. I believe some are from either a past or future life who come here to observe. I do think some could be demonic or lower vibrational. And then you got the big daddy of them all, the djinn. And I think they're all here just to feed. I recently tried to exorcise a djinn out of my mother's house. Mm-hmm. Normally I burn herbs, I do energy healing. it didn't work. I'm no match for the djinn. I just think that the, you know, the red eyes, it's like the scarier they are. But another theory I have, I've got to tell you, because I've talked a lot about demonic possession, I've talked about black and white eyed kids, is what I've come to find, and obviously I can't be 100% sure, but it, in the realm of what most people would call hell, there is a hierarchy to demons. Now they're being seen, shadow people, green eyes, yellow eyes, some with bright, bright, bright blue eyes, and then the glowing red. It, demons have a hierarchy with, I believe, the white eyes being the higher up in the hierarchy, and then it just goes down. I've listed it in a video on my channel, but I do think they could very well be demonic. And I do think they're feeding off of us little by little until they take pieces of our soul. People don't understand, you lose soul pieces as you go through traumas. So when you come out of a big trauma or a huge fright, it could traumatize you enough that a tiny little piece of your soul will detach. The shadow person, I believe, then collects it for whatever reason. They don't have souls. I know that much because of how I view them. Anything with the soul, to me, I see the aura. I see the light. I see people on a soul level when I look at them.
Interesting. You brought up black-eyed kids. I know a person, and I was there at the time. We believe we definitely had a run-in with a, well, actually, I, two of them, one black-eyed kid, and then also one that I ran into. We were, for a hobby, since I'm retired, I work at a state fair, very well known in a horse barn. And so I usually do the midnight shift, which is the graveyard, which is just miserable. But anyway, you know, the carnival is right next door. And so sometimes some of these carnival individuals might wander around when they shouldn't be and whatever. But I had an incident. We had two incidents happen in the last 3 years. She had one where someone, we give out for the competitors shower keys. So we have showers in and outside of the building. And so a woman went to attempt to go to her shower, and there was somebody in there. And there was no way that this kid could have gotten in there unless somebody accidentally left the door kind of ajar and someone saw an opportunity and decided to go in. Well, that really was not the case. Long story short, somehow they got the kid to come out. He stood by a pillar, wouldn't say anything, looked like he was completely out of it. The typical hair bangs, the whole 10 yards, wouldn't talk. Don't know why they're interrogating him anyway, but it was certainly interesting to hear about what they did. But then this horse came up. They're going to walk it around before competition. And it took one look at this kid. And then, you know how horses freak out and then they start backing up and kind of whining. Okay. So the horse starts freaking out and backing up and whining. That distracts them enough to turn and look at the horse. The kid, look, she turns back and she takes one look at this kid. The kid gives her a smile and has all these really unusual sharp teeth in his mouth, very demonic grin. And then when she turned to look at this horse again, because it was in this panic, when she looked back, the kid disappeared and they couldn't find him. And so that's just, I said, you just had yourself a run in probably with the black-eyed kid.
Black-eyed
kids. Yeah. And
fascinate me. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I have theories.
Oh no, I want to hear them. And then I had a kid from the carnival. I think maybe Steve Stockton and I might have been talking about this a little bit. I think we did on his show a little bit about possession. And I said, well, I couldn't remember. This was like at 1:30 at night. Nobody's ever in the building. No carnival person is supposed to be on the grounds or in any building. And this kid was wandering around in the horse barn. Of course, I'm the manager, so I have to oversee all of this. And At first I didn't recognize him, but I two undercover sheriffs came up to me and that had different duties and said, "You've got an intruder in here." And of course, what am I supposed to do about it? I have no gun. I have nothing to protect me. What am I supposed to do? Say, go away. Anyway, long, long story short, I approached this kid who was wandering the building. It was pouring cats and dogs. He was absolutely dry, which either means he was in that building for a long period of time or something very odd about that situation. But it was when he was saying, I said, can I help you? he was kind of, again, kind of out of it. And he goes, can I come into your office? I said, no, you can't come into the office. Yeah. And it's just this typical black-eyed dialogue. I would like to come into your office. You have like that. You have to be invited in. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I would not invite him in. And he was just adamant. Like, I really want to come into your office. I thought, who is this guy? But then when I was talking with Steve about it, I said, I think that was, then I kind of recognized this kid. And I thought, I know this kid. He's from the carnival. And so, but he's talking exactly like a black-eyed kid. And what they would say when they want to go into a place, you have to be invited and stuff. Okay. Long story short, I managed to get him out of there through the police. It was a nice way of getting him out of there. I didn't want a disturbance or anything like that. But then I was talking with Steve Stockton about this and said, that is the possibility maybe of my first quote unquote possession of somebody from the carnival. Because, you know, sometimes I feel like they're lost souls, you know, or maybe they're more open to a lot of this. Their energy is very different from, you know, traveling with the carnival. Yeah.
Their energy is, I've never been around one, but from what I hear from other sensitives, like, you know, I see entities, I communicate with them, they communicate with me, but the BEK, I have never had the displeasure. I don't want one. I've been fascinated with them. I saw a show with like a very short segment about them, maybe 13 years ago.
Yep.
And I was hooked. I obsessively researched. I wanted to know everything. My next book, I'm writing the Shadow Person book now, and I just got the okay for the fourth book to be about the BEK.
Oh, good.
They fascinate me. I also thought they were lost souls. I do think some of them are hybrids.
Yeah.
Possibly that like went wrong or from an extraterrestrial race that is not good, that is lower vibrational or evil, you know, contributes nothing to the human collective. But I have this thing in my head and it nags at me. And when that happens, usually that's my intuition and it's on point, at least in my life. I don't know about, you know, I'm not a psychic medium. I'm just intuitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I believe sometimes that shadow people, when they put these kids in this fear state, they can overtake them. And maybe that's a shadow person possession. I heard one story about a BEK. The BEK knocked on this guy's door. He was tired. He saw their eyes. He freaked out. You know, typical BEK story. Let me in. I want to use your phone. Is it food time? Can I use your telegraph? So he goes to get his gun. And when he comes back, there is a white-eyed woman there.
Saying, oh, my God.
Saying, where did they go? You won't be hearing from them anymore.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, I had to research the white-eyed kids or the white-eyed people. But the black-eyed kid phenomenon goes back. If you can read stories, Native Americans called them, I believe it was Oktar or Oktar. Mm-hmm. And it was this alleged demon that roamed the woods and it would jump inside of people who were lost or lonely or, you know, feeling some kind of depression or something, who'd just be going for a walk. And the people would come out pale and black eyed. And that's one of the Native American legends. I'm not even sure if it's Cherokee or Iroquois. It's got to be one because that's what my mother is. And that's where I heard the legend from. But it's like it could be so many different things with them. But for some reason, I've never even seen one. And just reading about them gives me the absolute chills. You know, if I go out to eat and I don't protect myself, I'll know that the guy sitting behind me cheats on his wife. I'll know that the girl over there is, you know, I know everything about everybody if I'm not careful. And sometimes there will just be people with this disgusting energy and they'll be the nicest people in the world. The guy will just be sitting there. I talked about this with the host of Steve and I did like the paranormal. Can't remember. Poor Eric. Eric, that's his name. And he was saying that sometimes he'll sit next to people and the energy will be so dirty. He can't even finish his meal. He'll be so nice. And you'll just be like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. Like, and go take a shower because it's overload. And you know that there's something wrong with this person. And I feel like that's the BEK. That brings me back to that's how I feel without ever even having, thank God, contacted them or been contacted by them. But one thing I've always wanted to know about and find actual documentation of are vampires. So they lead me to believe that maybe that vampires are real and this is somehow connected. I'm one of those people. I'm a Twilight fan. I'm fascinated by real vampires, though, real ones.
I know somebody who's a vampire witch. I don't think she's well, I think she would believe, she might believe it very seriously, that she is a some type of maybe of a hybrid of a vampire in some way. I did talk to somebody on my show probably about 2 years ago, my podcast, who was actually staying at the residence of somebody who proclaimed themselves to be a vampire and had to go through the whole ritual of drinking the blood and all that stuff because that's what they thirsted for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so he was studying this person. I have no idea to this day if he's still alive after spending his time with this person. But, you know, the thing is what you, I think it'd be fascinating to see who might be out there, but I don't know where you would find such a person.
That's the issue. Like, even in my research, you'll see on my channel, I have like 200, possibly more videos, and a lot of them are like vampires, and you get like the real vampires of New Orleans, which if that's your lifestyle, like, I am no one to judge. Believe me, I've got my 4-year-old dragon blood saging my home. Like, I don't judge anybody and I don't discount anyone's story, but yeah. I'm not looking for that. I'm not looking for humans who mimic vampirism.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the real, like, not even Twilight. That was definitely the wrong kind of vampire to bring up. But I'm looking for like the vampire Lestat. That's who I'm looking for. And I'm dead serious. Like, I won't stop the research. I saw something on some network. They were streaming it. And it was like, these people are real vampire hunters hunting real vampires. They had one episode and it ended. And I wasn't sure if I should believe in it or not. And it's a disappointment for me as someone so connected to the supernatural. I mean, we haven't even gotten into the extraterrestrial healings, right? Or the fae. I mean, there's so much with me. A lot of people discount me for that. They're like, there's no way, but that's okay. I've been discounted my whole life by people that are close to me, right?
Well, I have 11 books out on Amazon, my dear, and I have over 100 experiences with the paranormal, 3 to 4 with the extraterrestrial.
Oh, I'd love to know. I got to get them.
And after talking with a guest yesterday, because I do shows practically daily here, she believes that my possibility of my extraterrestrial, I've had about three, four of them. The one where I had the handprint on my body, she believes it was more of an incubus kind of thing that left this dark purplish handprint on my chest, which, by the way, when you watch this show, you will see in the beginning of the whole thing, the sketch that was designed. That is me, and that is me discovering the handprint. But, oh no, we're going to talk a little bit about this. There are more people, and most people don't realize this, there are more people out there who have had experiences. Doesn't necessarily mean they've had the same type of experiences or whatever. Sometimes it's just fun to categorize, what kind of experience did you have? When the tricky part to life here is when you have had a number of experiences, finding somebody who can actually relate to you, or somebody who's so open-minded that they would leave open that possibility. But just as a little example, and then I'm going to ask you some more questions here. When I was a college teacher, it was like impossible for me to ever want to discuss this stuff. But there are times when my classroom was haunted, and I wasn't haunting it. I was on a property that had a previous sanatorium. A lot of people died of tuberculosis, oh, these types of things. So we had a lot of that energy, and it's still there, and it would cause a lot of havoc. But it would find me because I'm a beacon, and I'm like I'm like a little lighthouse that says, hi, come and find me. And my light's very bright tonight or a little dim. So they'd always come and they would mess around with me in my classroom. And there are times when I just could not deny what was in there to a full classroom of students. And I would have to approach that very gently, because otherwise you look like the wacko teacher.
Yeah. And then you could actually get in trouble for that.
Yes, of course. So I hardly talked about it. It was in extreme cases when I had after hours what I called ghost class, because some of them, and just, this is what I'm getting at for my point about people. There was a point where I asked, how many people in here have had a paranormal experience? And I would say a good 75% to 80% would actually raise their hand. And the other percent would be like, God, you know, don't even talk about it. Don't even.
Yeah.
Most of my friends are non-believers, by the way. I would say that I rarely run into anybody to be able to talk about this with, because they think that you're dealing with the devil, which I want to ask you about in a moment. They're dealing with the devil or something like that. So let me put this back on you for a second here, because I know that how difficult the journey can be when you have special gifts or things are happening, or you can see things happening. I used to see things happening when I was younger, and I used to tell people about it, and they would never believe me. And then they would happen. Yeah.
It didn't become in vogue until like what, the early 2000s, maybe.
Well,
cool, but it wasn't when I was, it wasn't in the 80s, trust me.
Yeah, not in the 80s. And the thing is what has really helped, even though I hate to give them too much credit, is a lot of this programming that has been out, you know, on cable television with the paranormal. Now, some of that's embellished because it makes for good TV. But the bottom line is, for anybody who does know how to investigate and knows about the paranormal and has had experiences with this stuff, can look at a show and go, bullharky. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the whole thing. So, you know, but there is a percentage of those that can look at those shows and believe everything is the honest, you know, God-bidden Bible truth. So mm-hmm. I want to ask you a little bit about your experience with the devil here. So why do you think the devil had come to you? What did the devil look like to you, and how did it approach you?
Okay, so I just want to give a little bit of backstory. When I started blocking out my abilities, it led me down a really bad path. I was lonely. It was like bad relationships, no boundaries for me. And my sole mission is to help people. I know that now, to start a spiritual retreat. I do it all the time. I help people as a job, right?
Yep.
I wouldn't even consider it back then, because I didn't want to talk about my abilities. I have an ex-husband who has no idea that I even had abilities, right? So I went in very deep. I ended up getting into drugs. When I got out of drugs, I got baptized. I'll just call it like the drug life. I got baptized, and then very quickly I was pregnant with my younger son, which was a big surprise.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was pregnant yet. I was sleeping in this house that I live in now. At the time, we had only been here maybe 4 months, and my husband and I were sleeping, and I got up. I heard someone calling me in the middle of the night. Now, this does happen sometimes with spirit, but spirit have their own light when they appear to me. So I can immediately open my eyes and see like a blur of light, and I'll know someone wants help, and I'll have to tell them like, you need to go away. I'm sleeping, right? Boundaries.
Yeah.
But I wake up and I hear someone calling my name. Jem. It was like something out of a horror movie, right? So I'm like, what the heck is this? And I'm not afraid. Like I'm not fearful of any of them, the shadow people and the BEK, but like entities that I know, even devils and demons, I'm not afraid of them. Right. I'm very religious Christian. So anyway, I walk down the stairs and I hear it coming from my back deck, which is very strange, because you have to open two doors to get to my back deck. You go from den to three season room to back deck.
Right.
I go out there. It's nighttime. It's chilly. And I see this man standing by the tree. It's about 10 feet away from me, if that. Top hat, three-piece suit, cane with a little skull on top. It was like a dream. This was being presented to me as a dream, okay, as though I were dreaming this. And that's the thing about what he looked like. The face kept changing. It was ghoulish. It was handsome. It was people that I had been with in life, that I had bad relationships with, you know, celebrity faces. It was like this crazy mirage, because it was being presented as a dream. So I don't get into specifics of what he said to me, because there was things that I back then was struggling with, that he was like, I will help you with this and this and this, but you have to bow to me. And I think this had to do with my baptism and my abilities and like my newfound dedication to helping people and worshiping Jesus, because that's my choice. And I turned, he said, all we want from you is him, and went like this. And I was like, this is weird, turned my back on it. It had made this animalistic howl, like coyotes mating, if you've ever heard that. That's what it sounded like. Walked back upstairs. I jumped up out of bed the next morning, like, oh my gosh, that was another insane dream. But when I looked down, I had leaves on my socks. Now, when I went to bed, no leaves. It was fall time here, and my back deck was covered with them. And that's when I realized it was real. And I found out 3 weeks later I was pregnant. So when he went him, I think they met my son, who has abilities. So there's something with my youngest son that I'm really having to watch and make sure that he's not being attacked in any way or harmed or lured like I was, you know, to these wires. And speaking of dead files before, you know, Amy Allen said the same thing. The only she did it. The shadow people convinced her as a child to chew wires and she got electrocuted and they tried to kill her. I had a client that I did a walkthrough. She was being attacked, flung at walls. And she's like, I don't know what this is. I said, it's a shadow person who thinks you're a shadow person and is trying to take you with it. That's terrifying. I said to it, what do you want? I have someone very, very close and dear to my heart and my life who's in addiction right now. And when I saw them for the first time in like a year, they had this demon attached to them, which I call the addiction demon. It doesn't make you use, but it makes you make bad choices. And the thing with this attachment is when you die, it's allowed to take your soul.
Yeah, that's so not good. I
try to explain this to this person, but they don't believe. They think I'm just trying to scare them into getting clean.
Right. Interesting. The only time I've seen the devil, or what I believe was the devil, was in my younger years, in my teens. And I don't know, I would struggle sometimes going to sleep. And then I would get this crazy vision of what a typical one that they draw, you know, the red face, yeah, the horns and all that, laughing at me all the time. And I would put my hands over my ears and go, stop it, leave, and shake my head, like, get out of my head,
yeah,
and stuff. And I would have that a number of times. Now, I never had issues with anything else per se, except a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression, because I felt really lonely in high, yeah, school as well. I did. It's not like I discovered, though, that the only abilities that I knew I had in high school, although I didn't identify them or proclaim them, was just the fact that I could see things happening to people ahead of time. And when trying to talk about it, they thought I was absolutely weird. And then this stuff would happen. And it's just like, well, I kind of told these.
I can sense that you have abilities.
One of the things that I've learned, and you were just hitting on it, and yes, I am a sensitive empath, intuitive. I have telepathic abilities.
I was going to say, it sounds like telekinetic as well.
Yes, I am. And the thing is, along the lines with all that stuff, though, is that I did the only way that I activate really well, and I just learned this probably within the last year, is that when I get very, very depressed and really down, that, believe it or not, that's when I activate and I can win casino jackpots. I've won 18 in the last 4 years, 18 casino, wow, jackpots. Yes. And it makes it sound like I've 18 out of the 22 times that, yeah, I've gone. So it's not like I go every day and
I know how it is. We got casinos
everywhere. Oh yeah, you do. Yeah. I used to talk to one that probably went to half of them that you're next to. And then I can see things, and then I can predict things, and I can tell you what the sports play is going to be before they even hit the baseball and stuff. But I have to be very sunken down, low, depressed, because that's how I don't want to say how I grew up, but that's how I grew up in high school. I was very lonely and very depressed and very down in the dumps all the time. And I just wanted somebody to connect with.
And I had my first son at 16 for that reason. Love him. He's almost 23 now.
Oh my God.
Love my son. But that relationship, that was me looking for anybody who would connect with me. And I never told him about this part of myself. And then I learned, oh, people will love me and accept me. And I became a cheerleader and I was popular. And but I was so empathic, I wasn't able to, like, I wanted to, like, let everyone on the cheer team, and I wanted to sit with everyone at lunch. I didn't want to be clicky. So in that way, I was still weird. And I'm sure you understand, like, even when I was accepted, I wasn't, because I was different, because I could feel the pain being caused to these people that were being bullied. And I couldn't stand by and allow it. So I'm intuitive. I did think I was psychic for a while. And then I was like, I'm not actually psychic. What it is like, if someone, I'll give an example. If someone is missing, I'm not going to give specifics, but there was a child missing about a year ago. And, you know, they were looking at the parents for it. And I just happened to turn on the news. I do not watch the news. I got a visit from this child, and I was told where the child was and what happened to the child, because I communicate with spirits in this way. What happened to you?
Right.
But sometimes they approach, which is why I don't watch the news. And I really don't watch much YouTube either, unless I put a block up, because I will get a visit and I'll be like, hey, this is what happened. But I learn a lot from them, but I'm not that person that's going to, like, call the cops and be that crazy psychic detective.
This is a good place to stop. Let's all head over to part 2 of the Gemma Jade interview.